Hello and welcome to The Intersection. We're the podcast where marketing, sales, operations, and technology stop working in silos and start driving real growth for building materials brands. I'm Megan Kavinsky, CEO of Point to Point. We're a sales and marketing agency helping mid-market building materials manufacturers build the marketing engine and sales culture they've never had and always wanted. Each episode, I'm joined by Steve Coffey, Senior Managing Partner of Coffey & Co., a growth and strategy firm focused in building materials, and Deneen Harper, founder of DHX Consulting and a fractional CMO for, you guessed it, building materials brands. We're here to close the gaps between marketing and sales, strategy and operations, technology and execution, because in those gaps, you bleed margin. And we're going to show you how to stop it. No fluff, just what works. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Intersection. I'm Megan Kavinsky, CEO of Point to Point, and joined today by Steve Coffey, Managing Partner of Coffey & Co. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Megan. Good to be here with you today. Good.
Good. Recovered from AIA?
I think so. I think it actually takes me longer to recover than I think it does. So midweek, you know, I'm all gung-ho, ready to get back to it on Monday or, you know, when I get back typically Friday, Saturday, whatever it is. And then by Wednesday, I'm like,
Yeah.
But I think I am. I had a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. It was a great show. I was really impressed by what AIA put together in San Diego. And I thought the levels of engagement and participation were strong. We did talk about in the first podcast that we did, our quick hits, that we weren't really sure like what attendance looked like and how it went. I did have a chance to get a little bit of data, and without boring anyone too much numerically, it was a little bit up from last year from both an exhibitor and an attendee perspective. But I heard from most of the people who were exhibiting that show floor traffic was up, you know, and there was more engagement on the show floor. And so I don't know if AIA did anything different to try and encourage that more, but I did get positive feedback from the majority of manufacturers. Now, you're never going to get 100%, but the majority that I spoke to. So,
Megan, how much do you think that had to do with location, being in San Diego and maybe there being a lot of architectural firms based or design firms based on the West Coast? And just attendance being up.
Well, it wasn't up by, it was like up by like 400 people or something like that, you know? So okay. I don't know that attendance being up was enough. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like very incremental up. So one thing maybe that it, well, and if anything, coming out there, I'll admit, I was pretty pessimistic about the amount of show floor traffic that we were going to get, because San Diego is a beautiful, walkable beachfront community. And, you know, I don't know if everyone listening to this knows, but the show floor is inside. And so I wasn't really sure if people were going to be opting to spend additional time on the show floor. But by all accounts, they did, at least on day one. I don't have good anecdotal, because I left. I don't have good anecdotal feedback on what show floor traffic was like on day two. So what do you think? Do you have any hypotheses?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been going for 5 years now. And, you know, it's a specialized show for the A&D community. And I expect there to be, you know, less of a crowd walking around the show floor than, you know, larger shows or shows for a wider audience. So I expected that. I did feel like I was shoulder to shoulder with people in the aisles more than I ever have. So yeah, I saw that. I also heard people in the booth saying, yeah, I mean, we had really good traffic for the first day, right? A lot of people coming through, a lot of architects coming through. Still, I felt overall, just looking at it, I thought, I don't feel like this is a much larger attendance. So your data is probably confirming my theory of I didn't think it was like double, you know, previous years. And I was kind of curious how San Diego would compare to, you know, like Philadelphia or anything like that. So, but overall, I thought it was good.
Next year's Philadelphia, you know, Boston, And I like the idea of going back and forth, East Coast, West Coast,
I do too. I was just going to say that. I do too.
Yeah, you get like, if you know, if it's more convenient for one or the other, or you can be just like us where you travel the country, you know, courtesy of AIA, but because of AIA, you get to go see all these cool different venues and cities that have different architectural stylings and history and detail to them, you know. So it is cool to go to a show like that and then be in the city, like in the Gaslamp District, you know, where you're like more aware of what's happening architecturally than maybe if you were in San Diego to like go to the beach, you know. So
I will say too, this year I spent more time with the architects and around the events and the seminars that were happening, and I got a much better vibe from the architects, at least from their experience on the show versus their experience in the seminars and things like that. So I felt like a lot of, especially younger architects, were coming hungry. They were looking, they had specific, which I'm sure we'll talk about this because you and I both noted this, but architects were going looking at specific projects that they had. I want to know about this product because I've got this project that I want to talk about. The manufacturers I don't felt came in that way, which we can talk about that a little bit later, but the architects that I overheard or watched in group settings going back and forth, they were learning. They were hungry for that new information. A lot of the seminars obviously naturally focused on the usage of AI and, you know, how technology has changed within the last 2 or 3 years. So a lot of those discussions, I actually got a lot of that out of that. There was a lot of excitement in that versus just walking around the trade show floor. So I actually enjoyed that aspect of AIA 2026 versus other years. Maybe it's just because I spent more time in those areas this year than I have before. Yeah. But I thought that was good. And I thought AIA did a really good job of facilitating that conversation with the architects. So that was one takeaway that I had overall that I thought was really good about this one.
Well, I think there were two good nuggets in there. So one, you explored the show differently this year than you have in years past. So I think if you're a manufacturer listening to this and you're maybe attending the show on a budget, you might only have one person there. But even if you have two, you might want to send one out for a few hours to go explore the other areas of the show and better understand the conversations that are happening there, because it might get you to think about the show differently and how you engage, right? The second thing, and this is a shameless plug for my other podcast, Inside the Spec, actually, we brought forward some of the panels that were in those outside rooms, like what you're talking about, Steve. It's the one on AI, and there was another one on sustainability. And we're covering both of those on my other podcast. So go check that out for anyone listening and wants to hear more. And you too, Steve, you go be a loyal listener. Yeah.
Yeah. You're allowed to shamelessly plug. And I think those are really good topics right now. Those are the buzzwords that I kept hearing all across the time that I was at the show between architects and the manufacturers. Right. So What kept coming up were those two things specifically. So I'm excited to go listen to those.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, what we talked about was similar to what you and I had talked about the last time. Some of the observations there were on the show floor. It used to be that they would do this like technology center, right? And now it was like every other booth had some sort of technology provider. So it was a lot about talking about, you know, the different technology stacks that architecture firms are implementing, the challenges in terms of using AI with the importance or the seriousness of what we do. You know, like you can't make a mistake. Like what's specified has to be correct. And AI is still turning back a lot of slop and not able to segment. And what do you keep private and what do you bring public? And, you know, how do these tools all talk to each other? So there was a lot of, and technology AI fatigue. There was a lot of that came up there. But same observation on the show floor about the amount of technology providers that you and I had, I think, talked about in our teaser video, or if we didn't, we should have. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think there were a lot more companies that because of, and I don't want to get too far down to this, so yeah, just stop me, Megan, because I won't be quiet about
near and dear to your
talking
heart
about
here.
It. Yeah. Yeah, but there are, as a result of AI and even vibe coding, IT teams within manufacturers are able to tool much more effectively from a software standpoint, much more effectively than they ever were. But that also means that the developers of software products or, you know, smaller technology firms are able to do a lot more and add a lot more features and benefits to their software applications, whatever they may be, either for the architect or for the manufacturer, or obviously for those companies that serve both of those audiences. So as a result, to your point, there were technology booths and companies all over the place. And then the companies were talking about a little bit about technology, but I didn't see a lot of new technology within the booths. And I think you can speak to that because you noticed that. But I felt like the problem or the frustration that the architects came to the show with, because I actually had talked to a few that had this frustration specifically, is that there are so many tools that integration is now a problem. So the software companies build really cool tools and really, really cool widgets, but integrating all these software, these pieces of software to cohesively make a project that's without error or that doesn't have to have the same amount of man errors to fix man hours, to fix errors or things like that, is still a dilemma for architectural firms. So the technology is there, but it's really buggy. And there's so much integration that is needed that the firm doesn't know how to do, that they end up just having a lot of software costs for all of these different tools that are now available and no way to synchronize them effectively. Now, the same is true for the manufacturer, but I felt that that was a frustration that I heard architects had. I think that was the topic of some of the seminars that were there as well. What did you see as far as the manufacturers and the booths that were there in how they were talking about technology?
Well, I definitely feel like the architecture firms are ahead of the manufacturers in terms of their adoption of technology. I think that, and I was sharing this, you know, we did an event on Thursday night and I was talking to some people, some of the manufacturers that were there, and I was telling them these observations about, hey, we didn't really feel like manufacturers showed up with, you know, as much engagement from a technology or digital perspective. And this guy was like, well, obviously you didn't come to my booth because we were using, you know, virtual reality and da, 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 da. And so I was like, well, that's great. You know, I wish I'd gone over there. I would have taken a picture and told everyone about it, but we will do some show and tell just in a little bit here in this episode, but I don't have a picture of that booth, but I can't remember, that event was so busy. I can't remember exactly who it was, but whoever you are, good job. You know, in general, I was really hoping with a lot of our clients, you know, what they're talking about is their ability to help on more of the design assist side of things for more complicated systems, you know, structurally integrated type products. And I didn't really see a lot of booths bringing forward. And along with that, obviously, comes more of the ability to do through AI some preliminary ideation that you don't even really need. You used to have to have a configurator on your website, and that's still an easy way to do it. But now you can just do it through a platform. You know, like I had a client who's done an excellent job of, they have sort of a more, what might be considered an outdated looking product. And they're doing a really cool, like they go into an architect's project gallery on their website, and they'll show them if they're not using their product. Well, actually, here are the ways that we could have done these buildings together differently if you had brought us in to work together. So let's talk about what your next whatever may be. And, you know, we can do some of this iteration. And they're doing all of it through AI, and it's not taking very long for them to do it. It just clicks. It makes it so much easier to understand. So I would really hope to see more manufacturers bringing in some sort of visualization experience, even if it's just in a little area of their booth, like, hey, get a design consultant, 15 minute or whatever, you know, like, and I think we'll get there. You know, I know it's still maybe a little bit newer, but I did not see a ton of technology being used beyond badge scanners.
You know? Yeah, agreed. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think a lot of the manufacturers who may be listening to this will say, no, like we were talking about this prior to the show, like this is a big deal. We've got all these features and we've been working on all these things for architects. So they may disagree with it, but you and I both agreed. I didn't feel it come through when I was standing in the booth. I did not feel it come through when I was talking to the reps, right? And I think that's touching on a much broader subject that we should make another podcast episode about, which is you may have all these features, but your booth, especially at a trade show, but this could also be true of your website, also be true of your sales approach and your marketing approach and messaging and branding, is that you're focusing on the product features, perhaps even benefits, and the architect is worried about their project suite. Like they're focused on their reputation. They've got all these different factors. They're trying to defend certain products in the design to avoid substitution, you know, for whatever reason. They're still worried about availability and all these different things. They're worried about so many different factors now that they are subject to a large amount of risk that they have to manage. It's not just about the design anymore or just those features. They're managing a lot in this project. So positioning yourself as, you know, a cohort in this project versus just, we have this product, look at it, here's a new feature that we added, or here's a new color that we added. I think that's a big factor. That's where I felt a lot of the manufacturers, as I know you did, missed out in this AIA, is they were talking about products. At least that was my experience walking through, right? And the architects were there saying, I need your help because I've got all these different factors here that I'm trying to weigh through. And I want you to kind of step into my world and do that. And I believe that there are a lot of really good software tools and technology to enable that. But the integration piece may be a prohibitor. But I didn't feel like the manufacturers came as well to the table in engaging the architect in that way. It was more like, let's get the badge scan versus let's position ourselves alongside these architects to help them do better business.
Yeah, I think a lot, and I don't think this is an incorrect assumption, but I think a lot of manufacturers consider the show floor like the least lucrative space in the trade show overall, that most of the conversations and specification is made over dinners and coffees and, you know, conversations that happen or after the show from like the 5 or 10 minute conversation that you have on the show floor. It can be difficult, in fairness to the manufacturers. It can be difficult to go deep when, and especially if there's a lot of people at your booth, you know, which it delivered on this year, to be able to have that type of in-depth conversation to really do the discovery that you need to with an architecture firm about the projects that they have and what they're looking for your product to do. That being said, I also wonder if the manufacturers were a little bit surprised, but I don't know if anyone would admit this, but if they were surprised by the amount of project interest that came through at the show floor, you know, that I do think, and I heard this not directly, not like, oh, we sort of would have taken a different approach if we'd known that it was going to be a better show, you know, but that, like you've mentioned a couple of times, the architects came with specific projects that they wanted to engage with the manufacturers on. And what we saw, and to your point, we saw manufacturers that came with products that they felt like they were going to have to sell to an architect or talk to an architect about to get interest for a project. It felt like there was a disconnect there. And I can understand from the manufacturer's perspective why that may be the case. You know, it's been our ABI has been down for forever, and, you know, it's been a tougher climate, but we did hear a lot of people feel like projects are getting off the sidelines and coming to the forefront, and people just feel like you can only wait for so long. And so maybe we saw more glimmers of optimism in San Diego. Could have been the 75 degree temperatures and sunshine, because certainly everyone feels more optimistic when it's 75 degrees and sunny out and you're staring at a body of water. But maybe the optimism had some manufacturers on their heels in terms of what they had planned and prepped their team for. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it comes down to booth design to a certain degree. So we should talk about booth design. But before we do, to your point, I feel like a lot of that, instead of just focusing on selling the products on the show floor, I feel like a lot of the relationship building or focusing on the projects needs to happen in pre-show outreach and, you know, gain attention to draw them to your booth pre-show, but then also post-show strategy, So I feel like that's where a lot of companies are very weak, is in the post-show strategy. I've seen companies that do actually pretty well at, you know, developing visibility for, you know, hey, come to booth so-and-so. Post-show strategy is oftentimes very weak and just limited to a couple sales calls or a sales routine that they bring them through instead of actually prompting a relationship. So I do feel like pre-show and post-show strategy is one of the most important factors to developing, you know, getting your reps bought into the architectural projects that they come with. Do you agree? Do you disagree?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean,
it's kind of a no-brainer, but
yeah, kind of a no-brainer. And, you know, when we talk to people about trade show strategy, that's what we talk about. You know, like we don't do booth design. We can help with graphics and stuff, but what we coach people is, you know, what's your email and social outreach? How much outbound calling are you doing to get, you know, people excited, and use being at the trade show as a way to rekindle those relationships? You know, how do you show up on the show floor? What kinds of questions are you asking? You know, what are we looking to collect as an organization, you know, live? And then also post show. Okay, well, what's that follow-up strategy look like? And for me personally, I feel like it's got to be two-pronged. There is one, the sales reps absolutely have to do individual outreach that's personalized and customized based on the conversations that they had in the booth. But marketing can also be helping to provide, you know, it's not offensive to be getting post show, like, hey, thanks for stopping by our booth. You know, like you can get something from a salesperson and you can get something from the marketing team. And the power of them both together is going to be better than any one separately, right? The other thing is that it can't just be one and done, you know, so a post-show nurture sequence, you know, that involves more than one phone call, more than one email, is going to help turn those relationships into active project opportunities, you know, better than just saying like, oh, okay, I didn't email. We just did our email. Moving on.
Yeah. Those are really good points. Two really good points. And yes, it is a no-brainer. Everybody listening to this has probably heard that before, right? To some degree. Yeah. I'm amazed at how many manufacturers don't do it. At the end of the day, they do it so poorly. Post-show strategy. And that's, to me, I mean, it's age-old sales principle. Sales is in the follow-up. And so inviting them into that world where they feel like they can discuss projects with you as a company, and you're talking about your product in a much broader sense within that architectural firm, to me that's where it's at. And I'm shocked at how many companies to this day, manufacturers still don't do that well. And I think it takes intentionality.
You see it a lot in building materials. I mean, most people sell through some form of distribution. Not everyone, but most, right? Mm-hmm. When you sell through distribution, you have large client relationships with a lot of associated inbound lead volume with them that gets you more reactive than proactive. You have a very good, the customer's at the center of it. You know, when they are on the phone and they're calling you with a project or a problem, you know where to get them in your organization, but you might not have to prospect all that much. And so to meet your number. And so that proactive outbound prospecting muscle is not something that I think most building product manufacturers are particularly strong at. And that's, I think, where, to your point, the trade show follow-up can fall flat.
Yeah.
Even though absolutely. We all know we shouldn't do it. You get back in, you get sucked into the day-to-day. You were out at the AIA show for 3 days. And now you have all your normal core customers that you haven't been in contact with. And you get back to that. And then all of a sudden the show was a month ago and you haven't done what you were supposed to do and da, 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 you know? So, might have a family vacation. And I mean, there's lots of things. Life gets in the way.
Yeah, 100%.
But that's where it's a lot of money to go to these shows. And there's, if you want to exceed your sales plan for the year, pretty start doing this stuff, right? You know, like you'll be there before you know it. But you did mention the booths, you know, and I think that is something that we should cover. And you and I both have, I think, we had some similar observations, we had some different observations. So I think we should go down the row of like, you know, who do we think told a particularly good story in their booth and why? You know, what were we actually impressed by on the show floor? I want to give our listeners just one more caveat. This is a tricky topic, right? Because especially at AIA, you have the big manufacturers that can invest a lot in their booth, and they can do these great experiential type things, like thinking about you, Rockwool, and your sound tunnel, you know, like that are, you know, instant classic. But then you also have, and they have the learning labs where the architects are in the learning lab. But then you have a lot of, you know, majority of specified products are more mid-market, not the big guys. And you're in a 10 by 10 or a 10 by 20, and you don't have all this space for experiential things. And so how do you stand out? You know, so I think as we go through them, we can talk about sort of what the size of the booth was relative, or, you know, the level of perceived investment was relative to the experience or the overall story that they were telling too, is important to keep in mind, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this year especially, I saw a lot of booths on a budget, which, you know, previous year's design, I noticed actually quite a few booths were last year's design, even the year before that. There were a couple booths that had new design or new features and things like that, but exact same thing. So I think, and let me also say, Megan, this, I love talking about this piece specifically because I love trade shows. I love walking around and experiencing so much of what we do since COVID is online and with Zoom calls or whatever it may be, or over the phone. So I feel like being in a room with all these people, both the architect and the manufacturer, is so exciting. So I think it's such an opportunity, and it is a big piece of what we were just talking about. You know, there's pre-show, there's post-show, but then there is the opportunity to be in front of the person and engage them and actually shake their hand and talk about it. So I love trade shows. I love the energy. I love that. And so booth design is particularly interesting to me. The puppy park was hopping. Did you go to the puppy park?
I didn't. I saw the puppy park and I was like, okay, well, I don't even need to go to know it's the best booth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it was hopping. There was a lot of activity. I always go by, just whiz by just to see who was there. But it was interesting. I had not noticed that it was sponsored, and I have a picture here, a video. It was sponsored by Synlawn, which is an artificial turf manufacturer.
Oh,
so
perfect.
I thought that was a really smart move on their part. There's a lot of companies, especially at, you know, maybe larger shows, IBS specifically, that are starting to do things in their booths like that. Like they're starting to have seating areas. There's always the coffee bar or something like that. Where you can go and grab a water or something like that. So a lot of companies are having more experiential aspects to their booths, but Puppy Park is still, it's still pretty cool. I tip my hat to them, you know?
Yeah, I love Puppy Park.
Yeah. So can I go over one of my top booths?
The show is yours, Steve. You can do whatever you
want. Okay. Okay. So you can agree or disagree. I think we had talked to this a little bit, but the Gaudi booth.
Yeah.
I turned around. I was walking by. I was actually on my way to a meeting on the other side. And I turned my head and I saw them. And I thought their messaging was actually pretty good to invite somebody in the booth. Their layout was pretty good. And then I looked over and there's a Lego tray. And it's just a big table full of Legos. And I noticed, I would say probably 60% students actually were, they could not walk by without going over and just messing with some of the Legos. How many architects grow up doing Legos, right?
Well, I was going to say, it's the biggest cliche about architects.
Exactly.
You know, on Inside the Spec, we ask people, you know, how did you get into architecture? And most people say it started with Legos. You get a few random Lincoln Logs in there, and then a few others, like, I never saw it coming, you know, like, yeah.
Exactly, so. Exactly. I went over and messed with the Legos. I'm not going to lie. And I spent more time there than I care to admit. But I think that it was really good to prompt discussion. The thing that I was watching were the people in the booth attacking the people that were around the Lego set. And they weren't. They were actually going up and saying, somebody built this, and this was something that somebody just built, and do you need any other pieces and things like that. So they left the conversation up to the person to kind of walk into. They weren't like attacking them. There was actually quite a few booths that I walked by where the sales rep came out of the booth and came up to me and said, are you interested in such and such a product? And I said, you know, naturally, I said, no, even though I might have been.
Yeah.
And so it was really an inviting booth. And there were a lot of things to talk about around the messaging. So the people that I did see discussing back and forth about the product or the service that they had, they pulled off to the side, and then they were able to have pretty intimate conversations about what the architect was going through and how their service may be a solution for them. So I thought that kind of experiential marketing tactic is really good to pull me in and let my guard down a little bit,
yeah,
and then invite me into a conversation. That was my number one.
Yeah. I also thought the Gaudi booth was very well done. And when I went in, though, and I was like, because initially you and I were trying to like do best booths on a budget, this, that, and the other. And I was like, oh, this might be like our best booth on a budget. And they're like, do you know how much these Legos and this table cost? Like, this is not on a budget. But I did like the, it just was very open. It was very like clean. And then they had a bank of in the back where you could go, and it's a tech product. You could engage with the technology. It actually has me thinking, though, it was difficult to engage it on a show floor. I'm sort of walk back what I talked about before or add something to it. If you're going to bring technology onto a show floor, like, I don't know how you bring your own internet with you, but it was very slow. It's very difficult to like get the product technology to engage. I'm sure that will continue to get better. You know, I don't know if you can get Starlink into a show floor like that or something like that, but it was difficult to fully demo the product in a timely manner, you know? So
a lot of software companies will have it locally downloaded to the device that you can interact with, especially like SaaS products and things like that, which is a much smarter move. So that's a very interesting point.
So, but I thought it was great. I thought it was it was their launch. I thought they did an excellent job with a great booth and showed up well for the beginning there.
Yeah. You know, I think the bigger the company, the more widely known the product, it may be a little bit easier to pull people into the booth. I think if you're a mid-market company and you're looking for, you know, driving new specifications or, you know, engaging architects that may have never heard of your product, for smaller companies, I do think booth layout is one of the most important aspects. So I like to experience that. Fiberon or Fortune Brands has a host of products in their lineup. Actually had a really good design. It was beautifully crafted, beautifully laid out. They had different levels and then different rooms that you could go into. It was not a huge square footage, piece of square footage. What they did with it was really well, and they brought it up. So it was more like you were entering into a room and you were kind of getting out of the trade show for a second and experiencing it. Now there was another booth that was an architectural software that they had. I think they were trying to do the same thing, but they had bushes, fake bushes, lining the outside of it. So when you were walking by, you could see the logo up at the top, very little messaging. You could see the logo up at the top, and then you could see the sales rep's eyes kind of peeking over the tops of the bushes. And it was very,
wasn't it Wilson from Home Improvement that you only saw his eyes, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. I felt like I was going to get trapped if I went in there, and so I think that matters. So that's why the Lego booth drew my attention. Is you're trying to establish relationships. I bet you every single one of those students took a picture of the Lego building that they created and they shared it. That matters.
Well, I like what you were saying about the Fiberon booth and what they did with sort of the different room views there too, because WAC Lighting over the last year has launched an architectural division to their products. So they used to have, it was just WAC Lighting, and now they've evolved it from having residential to residential and commercial or architectural. And the booth last year showed up looking very much so like a lighting showroom, like that a consumer, you know, might go to, like, you know, not something like where your lighting designer may be like, okay, go look at these different fixtures and tell me what you're looking for, you know. And now they showed up with different rooms. So they had a few different vignettes, you know, that showed the possibility of what you can do with architectural lighting in their new product line. And I thought it was much, much better than what they, like last year, they were starting to evolve and weren't all the way there. So they completely rethought their booth experience, and it told a wonderful story about the future of their business and where they're going. I thought that was very well done and very well lit.
Yeah, I I remember that booth. I walked by it. You always note lighting companies because they're bright spots. But it was that one was specifically was very inviting. It caught my eye, and it just something that you remember. And I think that's important. Even if you don't have anything to send them home with, swag or a coffee or something, or a picture of a Lego set. I think there should always be something that sticks in the mind of everybody who goes into the booth. That's why I think experiential tactics like the puppy park or a seating area, because you're on your feet all day long. So if I can come in and just take a break, I always go and stand in the
Write
little
down
tunnel
your
there
notes. I'm
for
always trying to find somewhere that I'm like, oh gosh,
exactly.
I have to remember what I just talked about. Like, I need
It's
somewhere to
the Rockwool
go.
tunnel. Shout out to Rockwool, but I always go in there because it's so quiet. I
Yeah.
really like it. It's kind of like taking a break. So
Well, WAC, they did have a bar. They had a happy hour at the end of the day, and they handed you. You know how you can get a token for one back at a bar? They handed you a token during the day to get you to come back to the happy hour. So I thought that was a good strategy. And you mentioned it was open. So I'll just sort, and I have a picture of this that we can put in here, but it opened sort of like V shape opened into a couple different rooms, So it was inviting and open on either side of their booth space there. So I thought that was helpful. What about, did you go to a lot of people? I didn't see it, but and maybe you told me about it. Did you go to ViewRail, which went up? Did you go to that one? Yeah, because that's another one that I think did a nice job with like rooms and vignettes and demonstrated. So can you should tell the story because you saw it and I didn't,
Yeah, no, I think I was the one that mentioned it to you, or maybe one of the people that mentioned it to you. And I always like to see what ViewRail is doing. I think they're a company that has had an extreme amount of growth over the last few years. I think trade shows have played a massive part in that, a major part in that, especially at more builder-focused shows, obviously. They want people to experience the product. They want them to touch it. They want them to see how it's installed and things like that. So, as far as I could tell, I think they had the biggest booth for railing and stairways. Naturally, because they're a stairway, one of their major products are stairwells, is it goes up. But they do a really good job of bringing it up, and you can't walk up a staircase to nothing. But they do a good job of visually presenting that. And then when you get into the booth, they have really good photography and a really good follow-up strategy. Their landing page strategy is on point to say this is what it looks like in the flesh. When you're looking at it, you can touch it, you can feel it, and things like that. And then the way that they make use of the square footage is really phenomenal. So it invites you in because it looks like it's going somewhere. I guess it's more of a design feature. Maybe it's more because of the product than anything else. But going back to Fiberon, or Fortune Brands, it's kind of the same thing. It brings you up, and it's not just a giant logo sign above the booth. I'm being like I'm experiencing a lot more than just messaging on some panels. So I think ViewRail does a really good job of that, and then their follow-up strategy, based on what we were talking about earlier, is really good as a result. You get to touch it, you get to feel it, you get to experience it. It's not just pictures on panels, and I really like that.
Yeah. I think anytime you can get your product there to see and experience in a different way, like there are a couple point-to-point clients that were there that we had nothing to do with this, but Cal-Wall was there and they actually brought their product in for the first time in a small like canopy that went over their booth. And I thought it was great. It made them a little crowded in the booth, but it showed the product. And it was very clear, and it was a beautiful version of the product. So it was actually their local distributor brought it with them, and it was, relatively easy for them to set up. And then another client of ours, Enduried, that makes engineered thatch roofing, they do a really great job bringing several different cutouts and ways, and they bring it forward, and they really encourage you to touch and feel. And I mean, Enduried was staffed by one person who flew the booth out, set up the booth, brought all the samples, and they do a great job. I think for a booth on a budget, they do a nice job making it real. And I remember last year at AI, it was the first time I actually met them. And you can't believe that it's synthetic thatch or engineered thatch. You would think that it's real. It's gorgeous, but having it there, the proof in the pudding is, I think, the any way you can do that, you should be trying to bring it forward at the show.
just curious, what was your one takeaway from this show, given all the design, given all the traffic, the energy that was in the room? What was one major takeaway that you took from 2026?
I mean, I would say optimism. I would say that, you know, the amount of show floor traffic, the amount of architects with projects that were there, I think the vibes were good, that people were feeling more optimistic than, if you remember last year, I mean, everything was about tariffs. I mean, I didn't hear a ton about, I mean, I heard a little bit, but it was like, it wasn't at the forefront, you know, it was more about moving business forward, not about things that were getting in the way. What about you?
Yeah, I think I did take a certain amount of optimism from it. And I heard less about, you know, geopolitical concerns, you know, macroeconomic implications that may have been slowing projects down. I heard less about that and more about the projects that were on the table, just like we talked about earlier. And so I think my major takeaway was more of just confirmation over the last, you know, I'd say, several years, if not even a decade, I think architects are moving more and more into the position of, you know, they're more risk managers than they are just designers. They're sitting in between so many different factors, like availability, the owner looking at the same marketing, you know, that they are looking at the same products that they are, and, you know, pushing for this product, and the builder is pushing for this product over this one, and they're sitting in between the two and having to mitigate that risk to their firm's reputation, substitution risk and things like that. Yeah. And manufacturers that are, I guess the confirmation was, is that the manufacturers in the room that are focusing on selling the product are ultimately more and more, I think, going to lose to the companies that are doing a really good job of positioning themselves alongside the architect and saying, let's talk about your projects, your firm's future, right? And what this product means for this project and this one, and what that will look like moving forward. And here's how we can help you as a company. Those companies are going to win more and more.
Oh yeah.
The buzz that I heard in the room confirmed that. So that's kind of the takeaway that I took. And I think that affects sales teams for the manufacturer. It definitely affects marketing teams. But then I also think it comes down to how companies are utilizing technology across their organizations that affect availability and lead times and things like that to make architects happier, as well as builders and GCs, so and owners. So
the owners, they're important part of the equation.
Somewhat, no, yes.
I thought it was a good show. I mean, I guess on a more practical sense, I would say code compliance, specifically around fire protection, you know, continues to be huge. And a lot of, and then along with that, sustainability and without greenwashing, you know, and really having a story behind it. You know, I think, thankfully for me, it all comes back to like good storytelling, right? You know, but it's about, you know, uncovering the need of the customer and aligning with a story and a value proposition that goes back with it, you know? So,
yeah.
But I agree. Those are, it's not a one size fits all industry for sure. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The sophistication of buildings and technology and all of that is evolving. And the manufacturers need to, you know, continue. They're already moving faster than they ever had before, but they need to move even faster than they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. All in all, good time. Good show.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a wrap on AIA 2026. Thanks everyone for tuning in and listening to this episode of The Intersection. Be sure to subscribe and share this episode with your friends and colleagues if you found value in it. And we'll look for you on our next episode. Have a great day.